Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Romp past your mom, dad's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed and now. We'll talk until we can't no more, and then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Penny Bloom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Winter is Blooming, a Game of Thrones rewatch podcast by us, the Penny Bloom Podcast. We continue this week with the penultimate episode of the entire series. The penultimate of the whole shebang. Season 8, Episode 5, The Bells. Written by D&D, who I will never forgive. Directed by Miguel Sapochnik. I'm Colton Robertson, and I'm joined by Joseph George. What's up, homie?
What's up? Is it a pleasure to be here?
Fuck no, it's not. This blows. Dude, yeah. Okay, I'm gonna air it out. Let's fucking do this thing. Okay, so if you listen to like the very first episode of this show, the very first episode of the Penny Bloom Podcast came out a week after the series finale. Came out a week after Game of Thrones ended. Sorry, I said series finale, and Siri thought I was talking to her. I was incredibly forgiving. I was in denial about the show I'd spent so much time on being good when it's not. I gave D&D a great deal of the benefit of a doubt. I was like, it's impossible. It's so hard. How do you wrap up a show like this? Is that... Yeah, okay, sure. It is hard. But fuck's sake, how do you tank it? How do you fucking tank it? How do you just absolute... You don't even just kind of miss the mark. You literally are shooting on a whole other fucking thing. This is fucking bad. And we've been building up to this for the entire show. You know, we've been talking about how we're like, oh, it's kind of inevitable. She keeps talking about it. She keeps seeming like that's going to be the way she goes. Oh, well, maybe it's not that big of a shock. And when it comes around, it feels terrible. It feels fucking awful. And not in a way that's like, oh, I'm so disappointed she did that. In a way that's not good.
Yeah. No, it's, there's, you know, logic holes and stuff like that. It's one thing that you can poke through, like writing or like military strategy and, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like, that's one thing. But like, there's just actual clear writing errors or like just it seems that they actually set out to make the worst ending that they could, like to make the most amount of people upset that they could. And it's maybe their whole subverting expectations thing is, you expect the greatest show of all time to end, have the greatest ending of all time. Psych will give you the worst ending, kind of, that you could have asked for.
I like the Fallen Angel arc. I love that trope. Love it. Big on Anakin Skywalker. Loving Paul Atreides at the moment. I don't love them. You know, I don't love them as characters, but I love the arc they go on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Daenerys Targaryen is a fucking perfect candidate for a Fallen Angel arc. I think that makes so much sense. It's not the fact that she breaks bad. It's the fact that they don't know how to fucking handle it. And I'd never really realized that they don't know how to fucking handle it. It's so bad. It's so bad.
I was one of the mind too, of being a little more forgiving. And wanted to have an open mind coming into season 8.
No, I did like, too. Maybe... I thought we were building to it hard.
And yeah. And it started off okay, you know, 1 through 3. You know, that's we had some rougher patches as far as Thrones is considered, but like still great television. Like we're still, it's okay. The pacing's not wrong yet. Everything's just kind of cooking still.
Mm. And then general perception. See, when this was going on, episodes 1 through 3 happened, and everyone was like, okay, like, Okay. But how the fuck? How the fuck do we have episodes left? You know, like, what are we going to do here? That was basically everyone's biggest gripe with the first three episodes, aside from a lot of people were dissatisfied with the White Walker's conclusion and how it was one and done. That's it. I'm not really concerned about that. I would have preferred a bigger...
Drawn out sort of thing. Yeah.
This is a really good example of something they were capable of doing in three episodes, though. Like, the Winterfell, the Battle of Winterfell arc, like, the first three episodes of the season are really, really well, like, they go together well. They make sense. Everything that comes one after the other is good, is solid. It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. We're two in a row now where I'm like, oh, my fucking God. Can y'all get a fucking handle on this thing? Holy shit. It's bad. Yeah. It's really bad. I've never felt that way either. Like, I've watched this show several times. I think this is my third watch through all the way through, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my fourth. I think it's my fourth correction. Once when it was on, once a year later, once with Emily, and now this one. Here we are.
Okay.
But I've literally never been so viscerally angry at the episode and at the ending of this show. And we're talking like one a year since this has ended, like the amount I've watched it. It's like 2019, 2020, 2021. We started this in 2022 through 2024. So like, that's kind of how I've watched the show. I've never felt this bad about it. I've never felt this bad about it. So I want to make it clear that I'm not just riding the fucking hate train that everyone has had. I've just seen the fucking light, you know?
Yeah. I think on this watch, more than anything, we have gone into the deepest detail that you can pretty much go. Like, there's not much more that you can get into unless you want to start talking about the differences between the show and the book. But then that's just kind of different subject. But as far as the TV show is concerned, we have done the deepest dive you can. And the fact that we are both feeling this way, like we are loving critics. We give things very, very good scores, even like when they're not the best. But like this, like, and I hate even feeling angry in general. I hate feeling I hate being mad, and I don't like to be mad. Mm. And this is why would a TV show, which is entertainment, you know, in the first place, or art, you know, whatever. I don't know. Maybe it's to invoke emotion, I guess. Yeah, but it's not the emotion I want. It's not what I want to spend a year on, you know, talking in such detail, and then just to get here and then be kind of like, it felt like I literally got shit on. Like, I mean, like, it's just like, they wanted to piss people off. Like, I guess we haven't even got, maybe we just get there. We'll let the moments, you know, kind of
we'll
get there, and then we'll say what's bad about it. So I don't just run in and just kind of show everything, but
we'll start in Dragonstone. We'll start in Dragonstone, where Varys is writing letters pertaining to the truth about Jon Snow's heritage. When one of his spies walks in and tells Varys that Daenerys has not eaten anything in days. And Varys is like, oh, we'll try again at supper, meaning we will try again to poison her at supper. You know, Martha tells Varys that Daenerys' soldiers are constantly on alert. And Varys assures her that the higher the risk, the greater the reward. And she is sent back to the kitchen as Varys gets word of the arrival of Jon and his men. And when Jon arrives, he briefs Varys on the Northern Army's progress. Jon asks how Daenerys is doing, with Varys responding that she is refusing to eat or leave her chambers. And Jon replies that Daenerys shouldn't be alone. And Varys admires that Jon is worried for her. And when Jon asks Varys if he isn't worried as well, Varys says he's worried for them all, and speaks of Daenerys' mental state. They say that when a Targaryen is born, the gods flip a coin. Varys says that he knows not what side Daenerys' coin will land on, but that he is pretty sure of the sign Jon's already did.
I gave Varys the character nod last episode. You know, and usually on send-off, you know, for a death of a character, it does feel right to slot them in. But I ended up, I'll just go with this line for him. I kind of wanted to go a different route with character this episode that I don't know why it never hit me before, but it did. And I was like, ah, wow. The cool part of the episode, actually. The one kind of gleaming light for me, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. We'll say goodbye to him soon. So I'll give him one last line. And at least it's, I don't know. I do like this. Had a theory on that this man might have been a Targaryen, you know. Maybe the coin was flipped on him. And this is why he has to shave all of his hair. Well, if he was a Targaryen, he's at least not a dragon. That's confirmed. This episode. True. He burn. He go bye-bye. But yeah, I do. I'll give him the line here for this, but yeah, it's starting off just saying good, but you know, like starting the episode off like this.
Is the first time, like, oh, okay, we're 10 minutes in and Varys is dead. That's cool. Revelation for Jon as well, that Sansa clearly could not keep her mouth shut.
Yep.
He's learning
he knew. Yeah. Arya obviously has been with the, she's just hasn't been seen. She's been with the Hound traveling to King's Landing on their own before everyone else. So obviously, yeah, it came from Sansa whenever they were making their promise to keep their word. Arya like, yes, no, I swear, I promise. And you have Sansa being like, I promise. Like kind of, she was like, yeah, I'll say it out loud, but like, I don't really know. I don't know, I do kind of like the parallel of Ned writing the, you know, the scroll of
Joffrey.
Robert's bastard, you know, sir, blah, 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 all of this, and then now it's Varys is kind of getting killed for the same thing, kind of a similar Ned Stark kind of thing without all of the, I don't know, public parts, you know, that happened and everything, to make it all crazy and everything. But yeah, it was, I don't know, Varys is kind of one of my favorite characters there is in the show. Just, he loves the politics, he loves the philosophy, so I don't know, it is just sad, because I know coming in that this man is not lasting much longer, and that, I don't know, that is just a sad thought, but...
Well, it's a vicious cycle, too, you know. He's like, I hope I'm wrong, you know. I do. I hope that I'm wrong. But he's not wrong. But is he not wrong because he's chosen to do these things? Mm. Are these things leading her down that path? Should he not have done that, and would she not have gone down that path? You know, like those sorts of things, you know. I'm of the mind that it probably didn't matter, but... You know, this is what indicates to her that Jon Snow betrayed her. This is what indicates to her that she is truly alone in the world. So, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that could have been avoided.
Mm.
People minded their business a little bit. But I can't blame them, though. I can't blame them, you know? It's reasonable concerns.
Yeah. Varys is concerned with the realm and who just is the better leader. And at this time... Yeah. Daenerys, you had your time. She's been through her prime a little bit, though. She's past it.
Varys
current,
says that,
at least know, in the current state of mind.
But yeah, Varys says that he's advised more kings and rulers than anybody alive, and he knows how Daenerys will end up, given everything he has seen. And Jon is still opposed to the idea, saying that Daenerys is his queen now and forever. Tyrion meets with Daenerys in the Dragonstone's war room, where she... has been isolated for days, having become paranoid. She surmises that someone has betrayed her, and her hand confirms this. And when Daenerys names the traitor Jon Snow, Tyrion, however, reveals, like, no, it was Varys. And Daenerys confirms that the Master of Whisperers knows the truth about Jon. She tells Tyrion that he told Varys, you learned from Sansa, she learned from Jon, though I begged him not to tell her. So, Jon betrayed me. And Tyrion says that, you know, he needs to be aware of this information so that he and Varys can be prepared for anything. But Daenerys is suspicious of Sansa's motives for telling Tyrion. And the dwarf admits it was a mistake to tell Varys without Daenerys' permission. And Sansa told Tyrion because she trusts him. Daenerys responds, she trusted you to spread secrets that could destroy your queen, and you did not let her down. And Tyrion asks for forgiveness, saying that they want the battle she wants and their intentions were good. And he says, Varys as much as anyone. And he takes a long pause and looks at Daenerys and goes, but it doesn't matter now. And Daenerys replies, no, it doesn't matter now. A classic D&D line formatting. I don't know if you caught it again. Doesn't matter now. No, it doesn't matter now. They love that. They love falling back on that. It's one of their favorite things to do.
Which
I don't mind. It's just a quirk of their writing, I've noticed. Like it doesn't get abused in this episode like it did a few episodes
that one,
back.
I remember that. Like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, no, but man, seeing this like ruined version of Daenerys, like just staring out, she's just done. Like, absolutely, I don't know. Like, I don't know. That's why I think the performance is kind of clear this episode, even though I hate what her character does completely with every bone in my body. I hate what her character does. Emilia Clarke still puts on one hell of a show. She's the performance,
undoubtedly.
Yeah.
This is one of those scenes that's just like the reason why, you know?
The camera just on her face for like 10 seconds, or it wasn't 10 seconds, but like it kind of felt like it. Like it felt like we were just there for a while. And like she was just no emotion, or just nothing. Like it's. Everything's just over. I don't know. Amelia Clarke, at least, you know, if the writing is whatever, and we can harp on what we wanted to happen all day, but Amelia Clarke showed up and she did her job.
She elevated Arya like crazy, man. If she was a lesser actress, this could have been even worse. Mm-hmm. She's the grace of this storyline. So I love Amelia Clarke. So she had to get the. What is probably her last performance? Not, I don't know. Maybe next week she gets it, but we'll see.
Doubled then. Okay. Yeah, that puts her up
that
to
over to
19. Still one behind Lena Headey. Lena Headey's still the queen at 20. Holy shit. Wow.
She's not going to get any more. So if next week, if Amelia Clarke gets it in, she could come up on behind her, and she might get it. She's that good. So we'll see. But without resistance, Varys is taken after having wrote letters. When he hears the approach of the guards, he burns them. Grey Worm arrives with shackles in hand, and Varys knows what is about to occur. So he goes to the shores of Dragonstone, where Daenerys, Jon, and Tyrion are waiting. And Tyrion approaches Varys to let him know, it was me. And Varys understands, and he states that he hopes he is wrong. He truly does. And he bids one more farewell. Goodbye, my friend. And Tyrion puts his hand on his arm, and Varys is kind of shocked by the touch of it all, and is like, I think it's a last moment where he realizes Tyrion was like his only friend. Really?
Yeah.
You know? And, this is the kind of thing that royalty does to friends, you know? Like, it's like,
damn. Yeah, like Littlefinger was like the closest thing he had to a friend before, but it was way more of an enemy, like than
frenemy,
anything.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, yeah.
Tyrion was a friend. Yeah. Like they were, and Varys was probably Tyrion's best friend, if we're being for real, you know? Like, you can make an argument for Podrick and you can make an argument for Bronn, but they've gone their separate ways. And ever since he committed to Daenerys, there's been one person who's been consistently capable of bouncing off of, and it's Varys. So like, it's a sad moment for them. And I really liked it. But, Daenerys, with Missandei not there to list all of her titles, lists them herself. Sentence you to die. And, Drogon emerges through the shadows when she gets to the Mother of Dragons title. And, waits a second after Daenerys' Dracarys command and was like, all right, yeah, fucker. Hard as fuck.
Yeah, full stop. I will recognize Drogon coming out of the darkness here. They do well on the, you know, mind connection or prep talk that we think happens like beforehand, you know, thing to make the dragon or dire wolf come in right at the perfect time. They do well. They do well with those. They know how to make those work well, and I will give them that. It was holy shit. Can you, like, I'd rather get beheaded. Like, I don't know. I don't, like, this, that would be so scary. Like, I don't know. Just the being is killing you. Not like being killed by a weapon kind of just makes sense. Like, it's like, I don't know. That's just how people die. But, like, something about being killed by the thing itself. Like, that's just, I don't know. That Varys's, like, reaction to when he's like, holy fuck. Like, realizing what's happening and, like, mm-hmm. accepting it all. Like, oh my God. Like, what a moment this execution was. Sad that it had to happen, but.
It's strong, though. I love the shot of Drogon emerging from the shadows with Jon and Daenerys standing there. Like, I love the way that, I mean, I don't love it, but. That's the way they wrote it. Everyone's guilty by association. It's a wonderful one. Like, that's one of the few good choices about the way that they do this, is that it makes Jon look like an idiot. It makes Tyrion look like an idiot. And I don't exactly love that for the characters, but, like, they are idiots, you know?
They're stupid. Yep. Yeah. At some point, I don't know. I don't know. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, you don't have to kill her. But, like, at this point, kind of.
No, I mean, next episode, she says she's going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, I plan on killing her until she says, we're going to do this everywhere. We're going to do this all over the world. We're going to cleanse it and start anew. And he's like, oh, okay.
Goodbye.
Yeah, you do have to kill that person.
Yeah. Yeah, that is officially, you're not a human anymore. And, yeah, it's better if you're not there. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what, like, could have happened, you know? Because if they go with Jon, and, well, if they go with Jon, she goes crazy anyways and she still does what she does.
Yeah.
If they do this marriage thing, the marriage thing is really probably the only way that it'll work, but Jon's too honorable to be like, no, I can't do a marriage that I'm not gonna be a loving husband and whatever, so, like, it wouldn't work, which would still make her go crazy and do what she will do. So, like,
she doesn't want to share power anyway. I don't think she wants a king.
Mm-hmm. And after losing Missandei and everyone else, you know, that we've listed before and all the other reasons, like, yeah, it's,
yeah, I mean,
it's just kind of over.
Starting with season 7, episode 6, we're talking Viserion, Jorah, Missandei, Rhaegal, John's
half
life,
the Dothraki.
Half the Dothraki.
Half the Unsullied.
The loyalty of some of her closest advisors. The rightful claim to the throne. Yeah, I mean, like, if that all piles up on you out of nowhere, yeah, it makes sense, you know? That's why I think the Fallen Angel arc is a good one for her. I just don't think they do it well, you know?
Yeah, like it makes sense. What she, like, I don't think people are mad at the decision that she makes. It's just that, like, I guess, and I don't know. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know, like, I just go after Cersei at first. I don't, like, how is that not the fucking play? How does she not fly straight to the Red Keep? I've been trying to hold it in until we get to the bells, but, like, how is this not? How does she go straight for the city? Like, whenever the first fire, like, I'm still in disbelief. Like, whenever Drogon lets the first burst out, I'm like, what the fuck?
It straight up made me cry.
Yeah, I'm like, at least kill Cersei first and then do that. Like, if you're going to, fuck. I don't know. Don't start with the innocents. Like, but. We're at Varys' death.
Well, we're past
at
it
the
now.
Beginning. All right, yeah.
In their room later, Jon comes to see Daenerys. She asks him what she said would happen if Jon told his sister. And John replies he doesn't want the crown, and this is what he said to Varys. Nerys says Sansa betrayed John's trust. She killed Varys as much as I did. This was a victory for her. Now she knows what happens when people hear the truth. And Daenerys confides that the people of Westeros love John more than her, and that all she has is fear, not love. John tells Daenerys, but I love you. And she says she will always be, and she says she will always be his queen, regardless of how others feel about her. Daenerys asks, is that all I am to you, your queen? And she and John kiss. However, John breaks off the kiss, still unable to get over their blood ties. And in response, Daenerys accepts this and solemnly says, all right, then. Let it be fear. One last shot in the dark, you know?
I think she's just lost everything and just got... She's got to the point where it's like, yeah, well, people are going to come down with me. You know, she's not going down alone. That's just what it, I don't know. It's what it comes down to. She's going out with a bang, and
it's dying.
Yeah, I guess. I think it's just, it doesn't matter. Like, if she does, she does. If she doesn't, great. Like, I think it's just kind of like, I don't care. She has no one. She's alone. She'll try to conquer and try to still do what she can do. But if she, I don't think she's like ever afraid of dying. Like, she's always going to put herself in danger. I guess at this point there is no danger, though, if she can't.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I straight up don't think it's about like living or dying. I think it's straight up about ruling peacefully or ruling violently. Like that's the thing she's contemplating now. And now she's like, all right, fine. Then that's enough. That's it. That's over for me. But in the throne room of Dragonstone, Tyrion consults with Daenerys, the latter of whom is now ordering Grey Worm and the Unsullied to sack King's Landing. Tyrion is strongly against it, saying that the citizens of the city are not Daenerys' enemy and are innocent. If you storm the city, thousands of children will die. He says that the small folk are afraid of Cersei because she will punish any rebellious acts. And if we can just wait that out, we can succeed. And Daenerys counters that Cersei is using mercy as a weakness against them. But Cersei is wrong. Mercy is their strength. Her mercy for the future generations of Westeros, not those here now.
When you have to start talking like that.
Yeah, you're done. You're done.
You know you've gone down the wrong path. Whenever Children. Not even just innocent adults.
That's even bad.
Yeah, that's even bad.
All of it's bad. But he's like, I want to make it clear. Thousands of children will die. You will kill kids. You're aware of that. That affects the future generations of Westeros, you are aware.
That is the future generation of Westeros right there. Yeah, I think she's just looking for any justification she can. That's how it has to be done. There is no justification for it ever, so that it has to be founded in some way. It is her destiny. It is what she's meant to do. It is right
for it is. In a last ditch effort to get through to Daenerys, Tyrion bargains one last time. He will go and talk to Cersei and convince her to surrender, saying Cersei's followers will abandon her if they know the war is lost. Give them that chance. When he does, he will ring the bells of King's Landing, indicating the full, unconditional surrender of Cersei and her army. Tyrion pleads with her not to attack unless he's done this deed. And Daenerys reluctantly agrees, and before Tyrion leaves, she informs him that Jaime was caught by her men trying to get past their limes before warning her hand that the next time he fails her, it will be his very last. Fun little hole in this that I'm not sure. Do ringing the bells just normally mean surrender?
Yeah.
Nobody communicates that to Cersei. Jaime doesn't reach her.
Yeah, I think that was just Tyrion's plan, is that like, hopefully Jaime will get to Cersei, tell her that the bells mean surrender. But like, I think it's like a white flag in war. I think like it is he doesn't have to, I don't think it has to be communicated to Cersei for it to be, because the citizens are screaming, ring the bells, please ring the bells. So like,
no, and then more my question is like, why is Tyrion saying that he must go tell her that?
I think it's like convince her to ring the bells, like plead for her, because she won't do it. Like, she will use them as human shields. She will not surrender. Make her surrender so that she can live.
I thought the detail was specifically maybe on the ringing of the bells, but no, I think you're right. I think you're right. But anywho, Daenerys reluctantly agrees before Tyrion leaves. She informs Jaime was caught by her men trying to get past their lines. And if he fails her again, it will be his very last time. Then we're in King's Landing, where Ser Davos and his men are prepping for the siege outside King's Landing, and when Jon and Tyrion have arrived, Tyrion asks Davos if he can smuggle something specific for him. He gets past the guards surrounding Jaime's tent and enters to see his brother shackled to a post. Tyrion reveals that he smuggled the key to Jaime's shackles and unchains him. This is my favorite scene, you know, the last interaction Jaime and Tyrion have.
Mm.
That he wants him to be the one to go to Cersei and convince her to surrender, saying it will be much easier for him than it would be for Tyrion himself. And Tyrion has arranged with Davos a boat for Jaime and Cersei to escape to Pentos. Jaime agrees, but argues that Daenerys will kill Tyrion for this. But Tyrion then delivers my favorite line of the episode. Thousands of innocent lives. One not particularly innocent dwarf. It seems like a fair trade. And he thanks Jaime for everything he has ever done for him before the two brothers share a tearful goodbye for the last time. It's the best scene of the episode.
No, it is. Almost like Peter Dinklage almost taking performance too, which is crazy comparing it to Emilia Clarke here. Like, I think it is clear. Like, Emilia Clarke just has more. And just kind of crazy. She goes hard. This is crazy for her.
We're not far off from the last time she shows her face in the episode, though. She's not in the episode for like 40 minutes.
Wow. I guess that's just how much of a presence she has then. Because it's,
I think Tyrion is on screen more.
Oh shit. Wow. That you're actually, yeah. Cause it, if after she gets going, it's just, she's in the air and you just know she's on Drogon. It's not like we check in with her.
That's a choice.
You
know, like she's gone. She is the dragon. That is what she is. She's done. Like there's no Daenerys to show. This is what she is. You know, like it's just.
Mm-hmm.
So
I see.
I that's one of the better choices too. I think it's a good choice. They never show her again at the end of this episode. I like that choice a lot. But like the last time you see her is when she's standing on the wall, like working her way up to being like, all right, I'm gonna burn them all.
Dong, 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 dong. Like this, the speed up of the, oh, dude. Like there are,
it's well done. Like again, good. It's well shot. It's well edited. The tension is there. You know, like even though I know what's about to happen and I don't like what's about to happen, my heart's racing and I'm like Tyrion being like, no, you know, like don't. And then she like that shit. The first time he gets up and you hear the wings flap and then you're like, fuck. Like, it's good. It is well done.
Yeah.
The literal choices they did make, how they do the filmmaking is good. But beyond that, it's tough to reconcile. And the next morning, the United Army of the Unsullied Dothraki and Northmen are waiting outside the walls of King's Landing. Tyrion instructs Jon to call off his men when they hear the bells ringing. Meanwhile, a select few citizens of the city have been crowded in the Red Keep to protect them from the coming invasion. Protect them is in quotes. Cersei overlooks the city and sees her plan coming to fruition. Another one of my favorite shots was just the establishing shot of the angle we're going to see of the city burning later. Where it pushes past Cersei and shows the city as it stands. You know, it's like, okay, well, this is it.
Take a good last look at King's Landing. Because, I mean, there's some of it that's left. But, like, percentage-wise, what would you say? What would you say that percentage-wise she destroyed?
I less than you'd think. I'd be like,
I'd say like the castle, like the main Red Keep of the, like the Red Keep. It's pretty fucking done. I guess there's still some parts standing, like the throne room. It's all yeah. in ruin.
There's several blocks though. Several blocks of King's Landing. I'm going 20%. 20% of
yeah,
King's Landing.
I think that's probably fair. Yeah.
I don't think she does like half or anything.
No.
Which would have been terrible.
No.
But like I think we're at a place where tens of thousands die and there are a million people in King's Landing, you know?
Okay.
Which is a lot. Don't get me wrong. Like, it is a fucking lot of people she kills. But
it's like the first ring, like the outer ring of the city. She kind of just wiped them out, and then the Red Keep, and that's kind of it. But then all the everything else was just kind of.
She does go block by block it for a while there.
Yeah, I was wondering her. Straight, like if there was any, if it was just fuck it, we're just going, you know, it's just I see a road, I see people, I see anything, yeah, just burn. But yeah, I guess it's crazy that we're not actually like far off, like it's like we're like actually almost there.
Yeah
which is nuts. It,
in Blackwater Bay, the Iron Fleet waits in silence when Daenerys, riding atop Drogon, ambushes them by diving directly out of the sun, diving directly down on them. And the Ironborn fire their scorpions, but are unable to land a hit, for their target is too fast. And with his flames, Drogon all but destroys the entirety of the Iron Fleet. Euron is able to narrowly escape, and as the armies wait at the gates for the bells to ring, Daenerys and Drogon suddenly burst through the gates in a fiery blast, scattering the Golden Company. Useless-ass army. Wonderful addition.
We didn't even get elephants, and we didn't even get to see them fight for a single second. We got to see the leader of the Golden Company run.
We got a really cool mirroring shot that I enjoyed a lot that I think epitomizes the difference between a man of honor and a sellsword. When the Northern Unsullied and Dothraki army charges, there is a shot that almost perfectly mirrors Jon Snow looking at the oncoming onslaught at the Battle of the Bastards, where the camera whips around him and it shows the coming onslaught, but he runs away instead of facing them down. Also directed by Miguel Sapochnik. I think it's definitely purposeful. You know, I think they were definitely trying to draw that comparison.
Wow. I mean, that's what I like. There are the things I'll pick out that I like of the episode, like John's always like still good. Like he's like
stupid
having to deal. Yeah. Having to deal with what's going on. And he's like, wait, no, like, wait, hold, like, hold on. Like what the fuck's going on? And you know, him, it's just the moral lines are gone. Like there's no, it's just chaos. There's nothing you can really do. He's trying to save as many people as he can. Sort of thing, and you know, he's still being who he is, but it's just it is just kind of like, what the fuck do we do now? Like it's that's kind of the whole vibe that I get. The whole episode is just there's nothing they can do. She wiped out the Iron Fleet in like 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They're gone. She wiped out the Golden Company in seconds, like done. And then like all of the scorpions gone, like all of their defenses done. There is nothing that King's Landing can do. There is literally nothing that they can do. She has won. The battle is over. The last war has ended within a grand total fighting time of probably 5-10 minutes. Like of Daenerys just putting in a little bit of fire.
Yeah, and no, for like, sure. And we cut back and forth between, you know, Qyburn kind of begging Cersei to, you know, like, or letting her know, hey,
like, the Iron Fleet is gone. Actually, the Golden Company is gone. They are not defending the gates anymore.
The Scorpions are gone. We might as well surrender. There's another really good shot of the United Army taking the streets, landing with Grey Worm, John, and Davos kind of leading the charge. It's a eclectic, cool group of people to see mark streets. And they make their way to Lannister soldiers who are waiting, and the two opposing armies come to an intense standstill until Daenerys perches Drogon atop one of the walls. Realizing their chances of winning are dwindling fast, Lannister soldiers throw their arms to the ground. And Tyrion and Jon are visibly relieved as the battle is seemingly done and citizens of the city cry out for the bells to be rung. And after a long amount of time passes in a well-edited sequence of it going from Cersei to Tyrion to Daenerys to Cersei to Tyrion to Daenerys and Daenerys to Jon to Tyrion to Cersei. Just a wonderful, very, very cool building tension. Again, editing, music, acting, they do a great job. You can't deny that. I don't think you can take away from the show for that regard. After a long amount of time passes, the bells are finally rung, signaling what appears to be the end of the sack of the city. When the bells keep ringing, Daenerys Targaryen, Emilia Clarke, earns her performance nod, gazes at the Red Keep with a look of pure hatred and unadulterated madness.
She doesn't even look like the same person. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's nuts.
And hats off to Emilia Clarke once again. She's sitting on a green saddle in front of a green screen.
Holy shit. Yeah.
She's not looking at anything. There's nothing she's looking at. It is all green screen.
What do you think she's thinking of? To get her this mad.
The storyline.
Script. She's thinking of the script. She's thinking of, this is going to ruin my career. This is, I have been built, this is what has gotten me kind of everything, and now I'm going to throw it in the toilet. It's D&D. Yeah, it's, oh my God.
Literally, like, I guarantee you, the way she taps into such anger is as a result of her reacting to her storyline.
Oh my God. I wonder if anyone has asked her this. No way she would answer. I don't know. Even if this is the truth, do you think she'll answer it honestly if she was asked that question?
I mean, she's been very transparent about how much she fucking hated the story. Like, she has. There's a behind the scenes story that is absolutely devastating that, like, Emilia Clarke, one of the strongest people living. Like, she's suffered two separate brain aneurysms. I don't know if you know that. During the run of this show, she had two separate brain aneurysms, brain surgery, and worked on this show continuously. She was an icon, you know, in the time that she was on screen. Fuck. People were naming their children Khaleesi. And all this stuff. So when she read the script, she called her mom and sobbed for like an hour. That was what she did when she read the script for the finale or for this episode. She was like, they're running it into the ground. Like, this is like my character, everything I think a Fallen Angel arc is good. I really do. And I think that they've always done a really good job at painting Daenerys as she toes the line. You know, she does good, but she does good to bad people. And what she does to those bad people is fucking brutal. She's not nice about it, which is, you know, we applaud her for it. You know, who's to be mad, you know, like that, like what Tyrion says next episode. So dive so fucking quickly is jarring. It really is. So I'm of the mind that anytime she taps into emotion like this, she's thinking about what she's doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was kind of asking the question more of like as a joke, but
I think there's a valid answer. Like, yeah. I literally, like, Emilia Clarke, I have untapped amounts of admiration for her. She's a brilliant woman, a brilliant actress, and what she managed to do on the show was incredible. So hats off to Emilia Clarke. This performance was incredible, and without uttering a single word, Daenerys takes Drogon to the skies and in a terrifying display of rage begins to burn the city, incinerating entire buildings and neighborhoods, killing both soldiers and civilians alike. And outside the city, Tyrion is horrified by what he has witnessed. Following in his queen's footsteps, Grey Worm, filled with vengeance and a bloodlust, takes his spear and throws it at the Lannister captain, killing the unarmed man. And with that, it becomes the call to arms as the Targaryen, Stark, and Aaron forces begin attacking and killing surrendered forces. And in horror, frozen in horror, Jon orders his own men back and tries to get them to stop fighting. But unfortunately, the Northmen are in no mood to be merciful, and any sign of them listening is quickly undone when a Lannister soldier chooses to fight Jon. So he starts to fight, and then all of them are like, fuck it, let's go, we ride. The choice for Daenerys to start burning city blocks. I think it's astounding that the point isn't made via her burning the Red Keep and the civilians that are there. You know, like, it's still killing civilians. It still indicates a degree of madness, but at least it was targeted at Cersei, you know? I don't know. It's all bad. None of it's good. There's no way to fucking...
She's sitting... The battle is won. Her enemy is Cersei. That's who she wants to kill, Cersei. And she was okay with killing a city to get to Cersei, but Cersei's her goal. That is who she wants to kill at the end of the day. The bells are rung, and she's going crazy. She's like, no, I can't accept the fact that you're going to live through this. Like, you cannot live through this. You must die. But first, let me go ahead and kill a couple 10,000 people, innocents, just with no pattern, no strat, no...
Yeah, just, no, I mean, like, it's one thing for her to be a fallen angel. There's something really compelling about the fallen angel arc that makes sense. You know, when you're thinking about Anakin Skywalker, what he longs for, peace, justice, security, freedom, and my new empire, at least the actions taking are justified in his brain. I don't know how the actions Daenerys is taking could be justified in her brain. And I'm not saying that Anakin's actions would be in any way justifiable.
Yes, but he's taking out the Jedi. Like, he is, like, they are children. Yeah, sucks. Terrible. A lot of them aren't, I guess. I don't know. But he specifically is taking out the children and everyone else. But, like, it at least is, like, his enemy, you know? Like, it is, like, the military... Mm-hmm. of his enemy. Like, logical, if you're gonna genocide, okay, sure. It's tough to compare, I guess, yeah.
I mean, even beyond that. I mean, just, like, I'm mostly talking about his justification to Obi-Wan Kenobi when they are on Mustafar, explaining that, like, why I've done what I've done.
Okay, not like, the act, but him being like...
I don't know what Daenerys could say that could possibly justify what she's just done, even within her own mind. Like, what she's describing is...
Ridding the world of tyrants, breaking the wheel. That is her goal.
It's similar to what they do with Thanos in Avengers Endgame. And originally, quite... nuanced and interesting take on a villain in Infinity War, and then in Endgame he's like, well, fuck it, I'll wipe it all out and I'll rebuild it myself.
Now it's personal. Now, like, and I think that is what happened here. Like, it became personal, and that is why, you know, that is why she does go off. But at least Thanos is killing the Avenger. Like, I don't know. Like, he is like going, like, it still makes like logical sense. Like, and I hate to be like, everything has to make logical sense in order for the show to be good. But when it's the crux of the show, when it is the turning point of the show, the biggest moment that you're going to show, this is bigger than the killing the Night King. This is the entire show. The biggest characters, what we are leading up to. And when that logic doesn't track, then there's a problem.
Like, no, and I'm with you. I'm with you that logic doesn't need to track. But when I'm talking about logic doesn't need to track, I'm talking about time jumps. I'm talking about like, oh, Gendry made it to the wall really fast and he made it back really fast. A lot of that communication. But that's like, that's convenient. Mm-hmm. This is actively inconvenient. There's nothing about this that makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe like, I'm just in denial, but I don't think I am because I've liked this storyline in the past. I've enjoyed this episode. I've come to the realization that it is just bad. And I don't know. I don't know how to fix it. You know, I don't, given the time constraints and what they were doing and how they decided to do it, I don't know how to fix it. I don't know that it's possible. Like the way to fix it is to rehaul probably the last two seasons and turn it into three seasons, you know, three 10 episode seasons instead of 13 episodes.
Yeah. And I, you know, at least the one decision that I could say that like they should have made is her flying to the Red Keep first.
Yeah.
If she wants to go on her madness crave, sure, she can do it. Kill Cersei first. Burn the Red Keep first, and then go. That's at least one thing that I can like clearly be like, wow, I don't know how they didn't do that going down the road they did. But yeah, you're right. Like it shouldn't have even really. We shouldn't have been here this quickly, anyways. This should have. A lot more needed to happen.
A lot more needed to happen. It's that it just needed to be a gradual descent. Yes. Like,
just
all,
needed
like
to
you
breathe.
Could literally keep the events that happen in episode 4 and 3 and in season 7 and just let them spread out, you know? Let me witness a little bit more of Daenerys's isolation. You know,
or show us how Cersei is defending the Red Keep. We never see her side of it, really. Like, she's stocking up all these scorpions. Like, they're just kind of built off screen and we see it. But, like, show us her being like, if we want to stand a chance, we need to do these things. You know, don't let it be a surprise so that you can kill a dragon out of nowhere. You know, it's like, that's what they, like, that's why all of her defenses were hidden and everything is so that they could kill Rhaegar out of nowhere, which sucked anyways. Like, that decision sucked. So it's like, they're going for crazy shock value every time for everything. It's like, just what they bank on. And I think Daenerys' decision is the biggest shock value they could go for. The obvious decision is to kill Cersei. It is to go after the Red Keep. But then you see her just kill innocent people and you're like, what the fuck? The whole rest of the episode you're just like, your hands are on your head and you're just like, what the fuck are we doing? You're like, what, how did we get here? You know, it's not unbelievable that Daenerys is getting to this point, but it's crazy in the way that she did it. And yeah, it's just yeesh. Not actively bad. Like truly actively bad.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. But regardless, the Northmen are in no mood to, you know, be merciful towards House Lannister. So a house who are almost single-handedly responsible for every single atrocity in the North has suffered over the years. Ned Stark's execution, the War of the Five Kings, the Red Wedding, the Rule of Roose and Ramsay Bolton. The Northmen are ready to take it out on House Lannister, and they join their new allies in the slaughter. So chaos erupts as the Unsullied Northmen and Vale charge into the innermost parts of the city, killing anyone. That's the other part, is that the soldiers are also doing it. They're like, cool, sweet, we get to just kill. This is what was described in Season 2, Episode 9, Battle of Blackwater. Whenever they were like, do you know what a siege is? Do you know what happens when they break the siege? They kill everybody.
The rules are off. Yeah. Like
this is what happens. It's just insane that it's happening with the command of Jon Snow. And, you know, guys like, so it's like, what the fuck are we doing here? A horrified Jon is caught up in the disorder, deflecting attacks and shouting at his men to stop fighting while Davos tries to usher people to safety. and an increasingly fearful and alarmed Cersei looks on from the Red Keep in shock as the carnage continues and fire comes down from above, realizing that her dependence on Daenerys's mercifulness is folly.
Past the point of no return, you could say a little bit. Yeah, this is and Cersei's still, you know, still like, no, we're good, you know. And now that I've had time to reflect, I think that this is just death denial.
Yeah, I don't think it's rule denial. I think it's like
it's just death denial. She knows her reign is over. It's just like, holy shit, I'm going to die. Like,
well, now she's in a place where she's like, well, if I'm going to live, the safest place is probably the Red Keep, right? You know, like that's basically what she's thinking. You know, it's not really like, as long as I sit on my throne, as long as I possibly can, everything will be okay. It's like, I literally don't know where else I would go to live.
Yeah, there's actually no other option. Like, there's just nowhere else to go. They're surrounded.
For those curious, me and Joe we were text messaging for 2 straight hours after we watched these episodes last night, kind of hashing through our thoughts. So we got to refine them quite a bit before we came on mic here. This doesn't look good. On the ground, John finds one of his own men grabbing an innocent woman who is about to sexually assault her, and he has to kill a Northman. The soldier attacked John first, and John has to put a sword through him. And meanwhile, in the air above, Daenerys begins destroying parts of the Red Keep, sending tons of debris falling to the ground below. And around this time, Jaime sneaks around the cliffs on which the Red Keep is situated and encounters Euron. So that's where he ended up when he dove out of his ship. Jaime urges Euron to help him save Cersei. You know, let's do this thing. But the Ironborn King points out that the city and Cersei are lost. He and Jaime, he's like, this is all that's left. Let's fucking fight, man. Let's do this thing.
Another king for you. And it makes me realize, shit, Euron is kind of the king, like, right now. Like, the kind of, like, legitimate, like, if there is a regent or king, or not regent, that's like when someone died, but like the
consort.
Yes, thank you. If there is someone, I guess they're not married yet, quite yet, but like that's who it would be if it were to continue, which is just kind of nuts. The fight is, it's whatever.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't like either of these guys. I don't give a fuck who wins this fight. I don't. So, like, why is it a part of the episode?
To make Jaime die before he dies?
And he doesn't.
He gets all the way there. It's not even like his... It's not even like it made his job harder. Like, he was screwed anyways. It didn't do anything. If you take that fight out of the episode, nothing changes.
Euron should have died on his fucking ship.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did he know about this? Did he know about this?
This is where he washed up. This is just where he washed up. I guess. I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, that's just piss poor shit. Terrible, terrible fucking scene. Euron's a useless fucking character. Jaime shouldn't be down in the south at all. So all of it's bad. But meanwhile, Arya and the Hound sneak into the Red Keep and reach Maegor's Holdfast. The walls crumbling around them. Sandor urges Arya to go home, arguing that Cersei is as good as dead, but Arya insists that she is going to be the one that kills her. And before she continues on, Sandor grabs her by the arm and urges her to choose life over vengeance, saying that he himself has been seeking revenge his entire life, and tells Arya to be someone better than him, a living embodiment of vengeance she is seeking and what it will do to her. And when Arya tries to continue onward, Sandor warns that if she goes with him, she'll also die. As he goes to deal with his brother, Arya calls him by his name for the first time. Sandor, thank you.
That's the first time?
That's the first time she ever calls him Sandor, yeah.
I already went with Arya for my character.
Yeah, I did.
That's like, I kind of had the realization that she might be the main character. Like, maybe not main character, but like, main character when it comes to who the god of Game of Thrones cares about. it's Arya, I feel like. This is a lesson. Like, the Hound was clearly, like, very, very influenced by the Lord of Light. Everywhere he needed to be was, like, you know, for a purpose and whatever. And I think, like, his most grand purpose was to make sure that Arya does not die here as well. That this, it is, like, to teach this lesson to Arya. Like, they have the relationship. The Hound can simply say, do you really want to be like me? And just in that, Arya is like, thank you. Like, that's all it takes is that. So, like, it could just be a beautiful, right, you know, just the way it is. But, like, the Lord of Light, like, I kind of threw it out the window, like, the last episode and in this episode. But, like, because, like, the Night King was dead, and I thought that that was, like, the whole point. But, like, that I don't know, for the god, that's just kind of, like, another event. Like, we thought that that's, like, oh, it has to be, like, I don't know, that's it. But, like, they're, I don't know, they still continue on, and they're probably still doing shit, whatever. And, it makes me feel that, like, the white horse that shows up for Arya at the end, her, like, doing all these other little things and stuff like that was, like, very, I don't know. It was almost like they were like, hey, look at who the real doer of the show kind of, like, is. I don't know. Not trying to say that, like, she takes over Jon and Daenerys and all these other people. But as far as, like, the Lord of Light angle, I guess, is where I'm coming from, or whatever god is up there. George R. R., I guess. But, yeah, love Arya. That bumped, let's see, bumped her up past Sandor, sadly. They were tied at
yeah,
9.
I was tempted to switch mine to the Hound, because I do love him in this episode.
Oh.
Like, having the awareness to look at Arya and look out for her in that way, you know, like,
I don't want to make you switch.
No.
It would
I
be
mean,
poetic that they tie, but, you know, this would bump Arya. Mine bumps Arya up to 10, which ties her with Oberyn Martell and Tyrion Lannister at 10.
And 11 and then, would bump her above them.
Yes, 11 is Daenerys. That's the next one up. And then the Hound is right below Arya at 9.
Okay. I'm cool with that. I'm going to stick with Arya, because I love the arc she goes on in this episode. It kind of...
So 11.
It's
wow.
The first time I've watched this show since I watched The Batman. I realized that vengeance isn't the key. Hope. That's what I have to inspire. She goes down to the city. She starts saving people. She starts trying to take people to safety.
Yeah.
Trying to kill people. It's cool. I think it's a great arc for her to go on. And I think that it makes sense that she becomes a little superhero in this episode. You know, she does what she can to help, but ultimately not enough. You know, she goes through some shit in this one, but
having
convinced Cersei that all is lost, Qyburn evacuates Cersei and her Queen's Guard from the Red Keep, but they come across Sandor before they reach Maegor's Holdfast. The Hound effortlessly dispatches his guard before standing face to face with his brother, and Cersei orders Gregor to protect her, and when the Mountain defies her, since he wanted to fight his brother, Qyburn repeats the order, causing the Mountain to smash his head against the wall, killing Qyburn and throwing him down the stairs. Satisfying death. Well deserved.
Yeah. See you later, Qyburn.
Yep.
That was very quick. Very, very quick. But
one of those characters you can afford to do that with too. It was
yeah.
Nice.
We didn't need anything for him, you know. He was just kinda was cool. You know, he gave little kids candy.
Listen to your queen.
Yeah. Okay. And Cersei just being
like gone.
Yeah, Cersei just kinda being like, that's my cue. I will leave you two to it. You know, you guys do whatever
she's
you need to
like
do.
Walks down the stairs, fucking hysterical.
Yeah. Looks like Qyburn, like, holy fuck. Like, yeah, just kind of like looking at his body. You know, you got to imagine, like, she, like, that could have been her. Like, the mountain could have just slammed both of them if he wanted to. You know, like, he could have killed Cersei and it wouldn't have.
How would you have felt if the Hound killed Cersei?
Ooh. Well. Better than how she did die.
Yeah, I'm like,
I'd rather, the Hound just be like, Shink, just, you know, literally, like, on while she's walking down, you know, maybe it's like, he's like, do I kill her? You know, he's kind of thinking, like, wow, she really is just walking down. And then, like, he's like, yeah, just fuck, you know, and then he just turns around and just kills her. I don't know. I think that'd be hilarious.
I think that there's a funny thing they could do, they could have done, and I think it could have been cool the way that I'm playing it in my head. They don't do flashbacks, you know. I wish they, there's a couple things throughout the episode that I... Like, if they could flash two things going through Danny's mind as she's like, you know, like, mm-hmm. that would be really cool. If during this moment, the Hound could have, like, flashed to Arya saying she's going to kill the queen, and then it flashed back to him and just being like, shh, like, he does it for her, you know, ready to, like, I think that would have been a really cool way to wrap up their storyline as a duo. It would have been sudden. Oh. It would have been like, oh, shit. But
he stabs her right in the heart, and he says that's where the heart is, or like, you know, the yeah. like the lesson that he taught her, or something that could be that, man. The Hound killing Cersei, actually. Wow, never thought of that before. But
no, I mean, like, it's definitely the least emotion, like, you'd want Arya, or you'd want Jaime, or you'd want Daenerys, or you know, there's several people you would want to see do it, but if they were so dead set on subverting expectations, He could also use it as a moment to, like, defy his brother. You know, like, this is the person his brother's been tasked with protecting. He takes advantage of it by killing her and is like, sup now.
Now, what do you have? What are you doing? Yeah. Like, what? Look at what you're doing. And honestly, the Hound, he takes orders really from nobody. Like, he's for real just on his own. Like, in the mountain, yeah, no, he's always taking orders. Always just been trapped in King's Landing for like his whole life.
Fucking love the shot. It's a classic shot where the Hound's looking up at the mountain and the dragon flies overhead. Just so fucking cool.
They fucked there. I always have this like back thought of like, man, I wish I could be the actor of the Hound, Sandor Clegane. What's his
Rory McCann.
Yeah, Rory McCann, because then I could, like, that would be my wallpaper on my computer, would be, like, that, like, freeze, you know,
that's
like, holy shit, like, that's fucking cool, like, I think, like, an extra in, like, a show, you know, like, some of the people that like, got to load the scorpions and stuff, like, had, like, a moment where they were, like, just standing in front of a massive scorpion, like, you gotta imagine that person is just, like, they definitely have that, and they're like, they show, like, they watch this episode, and they're like, look, wait, right here, look at that, that's me, like, I don't know, I think that's kind of cool.
No, that is cool, that's a really cool, like, I actually, the same thought occurred to me last night, because I was looking for some of the cameos, because there's a pretty big one, and given his affinity for misinformation, and, you know, maybe he was lying, apparently Aaron Rodgers is in this episode somewhere.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. But, you know, really good chance he was lying. Given we know about Aaron Rodgers.
I guess I didn't catch him. I've never heard of
what
that.
What if before, I lied though? Through my teeth every chance I got?
Quarterback plays soldier in Game of Thrones. So just
nobody's ever just... like nobody surefired identified him in this episode. Like, there's one guy who people think is Aaron Rodgers, but he has expressly said, no, that one's not me.
Huh. Then, yeah. Oh, yeah, not Aaron Rodgers, literally. And this is explains exactly why he's not. Wow. But it does also say Aaron Rodgers explains exactly where to find his cameo. So maybe it's not that guy, but it's just, maybe he is just an extra, like,
oh, I mean, like, that is what he would be. Like, if we can't spot him, it's because he's just in the background somewhere. Mm-hmm. But regardless, this fight breaks out here. Sandor attacks his brother, and it has little effect, and he knocks Gregor's helmet off his head, revealing his face for the first time in its full glory to us, causing Sandor to mock him. And provoked, Gregor unsheathes his sword, and in his fury begins to madly fight his brother. But Sandor proves to be a better fighter and manages to drive his sword into Gregor's chest, and though it does not kill him, after pulling the sword out and discarding most of his armor, his disgusting, beaten, barren body, he bears down on his brother and lifts him up against the wall, putting him in a chokehold. The Hound tries to free himself by stabbing Gregor several times with a knife, which proves to be ineffective.
Just fucking die! He's like, yeah. What the fuck? Holy, what?
This is brutal. This is brutal. Probably the coolest action sequence in the episode, undoubtedly.
Yeah, actually the only action sequence I do care about.
Yeah. We got the Clegane Bowl. This was one of the things going into season 8. Everyone was like, we need the
Clegane Bowl. Oh, yeah. Man, I remember the Clegane Bowl. Wow. Yeah. All the hype for that. Yeah, no, but they delivered. No, this was like a... Actually, a good ending for him, you know. Like I'd rather it would be like a
one of the more poetic endings. He dies by diving into a pit of fire with his brother, you know. Like that's,
oh, yeah, wow. Would you look at that?
Yeah,
we don't face our fears; we ride them. What is
yes?
That's from Twister. Why did that come into my head? But
watched
Twisters
a couple times now. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Dune. Yeah. Just, it's just been, I've been
fear is the mind killer. Standor stabs his brother clean in the left eye as Gregor tries to gouge his eyes out. And even this does not stop Gregor, who begins pulling the knife from his eye, knowing that none of his attacks will truly kill his brother. Standor knows what he must do. Mustering up enough courage to face his fear, he tackles Gregor, shoving him through the badly damaged wall behind, sending them plummeting hundreds of feet into the fiery remains of the city. And thus we say goodbye to Sandor Clegane.
Yeah. Well, goodbye, good. One of the good, just great, great characters. I mean,
you know what?
Kind of crazy. In the stats, like, he is 6th. He's in 6th place in the entire show.
And I'm going to do it. I'm going to switch it. I'm going to switch from Mario.
He's in 5th place.
I'm going to tie them up.
It's a massive tie. Holy shit. Yeah, or actually 3rd place. Sorry.
A strong tier there.
Yeah. 1, Jon Snow. 2, Daenerys Targaryen. And then 3, Arya Stark, Oberyn Martell, Tyrion Lannister, Sandor, Clegane. Tied for 3rd.
It's a great gang right there. I'm going to do it. I'm going to commit to it. That. I'm happy with it. But I'm like, he's the one that I fucking loved, the Hound, man. Like, that's one of my favorite characters in the entire show. And if I'm you gave Varys that nod last week, kind of just like as a preemptive, like
it was
saying goodbye to one of my favorite characters. Let's go ahead. And he was good. Don't get me wrong, but like that's part of it. That's what I'm gonna do for the Hound here. I love the guy. Yeah. I thought he was a brilliant character. I love Rory McCann, and I wish he could have gotten more performance nods, but the character is just so damn good. So shout out to him for playing such a brilliant character here. But. Davos and John reeling at the carnage and fire surrounding them as caches of wildfire explode while Daenerys and Drogon burn up the city. Davos and John share a look, and John orders his forces to fall back. He and Davos rush people out of the city as fire rains down upon them. And Cersei herself is alone in the Red Keep when she finds Jaime, bloodied and badly wounded following his fight with Euron. And the two of them go deep into the lower chambers of the Red Keep, where Tyrion had told Jaime to go, where there would be a boat waiting for them on the beach to take them away from the city. Unfortunately, however, they find their path has been blocked by rubble. All hope is dashed. That's another good thing. You know, they thought they were going to make it out of it, and they don't.
Yeah. But it'd be even better if they thought, Jaime thought he was going to find Cersei, and he didn't. Or maybe the fight with Euron that he had that was supposed to kill him, killed him.
The Hound cuts off Cersei's head, and Jaime just stumbles upon her severed head. Like that'd be great, you know.
Yeah, the head just keeps going down the steps. Like it's like a
rolls all the way into the map room.
Campbell's like, soup, commercial. Yes. It goes to Jaime. Like they're always meant to be together. Yeah, it just finds its way back to him.
And just like
faces
him.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Regardless,
we did find the actual ending of Game of
Thrones.
That's
the ending
happen.
They should have done. They should have cut to black and then have been like Campbell's soup, you know, like that sort of thing. But unfortunately, they find their path has been blocked by rubble, and a frightened Cersei begins to cry in fear, saying that she does not want to die. And Jaime tells her not to look at the crumbling keep, saying, "Look at me. Just look at me. Nothing else matters. Only us." Hearing the weakened structure above them caving in, the twins embrace for the last time as the ceiling caves in and crushes them. Cool. Good job. All right. Meanwhile, Arya regains consciousness after she was left incapacitated by a concussive blast. She manages to get into a building full of women and children and convinces them to keep moving, lest they perish where they stand. And they begin to escape, but most of them, save a mother and her young daughter, are killed by the roving Dothraki. And the mother collapses and tells Arya to take her daughter to safety, and Arya grabs the child and begins to run, but the girl refuses to leave her mother and goes to her side just as Daenerys and Drogon swoop down one last time, unleashing a torrent of fire upon the innocent civilians. And Arya awakes later and sees the devastation around her, the ash raining, and she looks and sees that the mother and daughter were burned alive and calcified in their position. She stumbles around the city and sees the bodies of many innocent men, women, and children, all at the hands of her cousin's lover. And she then sees a white horse among the throes of the dead. She goes up to it and is able to calm it before mounting the horse, riding out of the city to an uncertain future, leaving the devastation of King's Landing behind her, and what has become an unrequited order fulfilled. The last words of the Mad King, burn them all, coming to life at his daughter's hands as King's Landing burns.
What do you and think thus, of this white horse? You know?
That's always been an interesting point of questioning for this episode. I think it's abundantly clear that, through previous episodes, that the gods certainly work in mysterious ways regarding Arya. I do believe there's a lot of mythic lore about the meaning of white horses.
And like in House of the Dragon, they had that Rhaenyra saw like a white something, right? Is that House of the Dragon? Am I remembering that right?
Deer. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a giant deer.
And I don't know. I didn't know if that's all it was. You know, I remember some people being like, is Arya dead? Is this her, you know, is she in seeing all the people burned and she's walking through, or, you know, heaven and hell, sort of afterlife thing.
In much mythology, it's a rare or distinguished symbol. It typically bears the hero in ceremonial roles and triumph over negative forces. I think
think that's perfect then, because my scene was the interconnectedness of the Hound and Arya's like kind of thing going on at the same time. I guess it happens through a lot of different stages, but like during like the fight, like she is being trampled on as the Hound is fighting the mountain, and they're going through similar things, but the Hound ends up dying. The vengeance leads to death, or like revenge leads to death, while Arya choosing to live leads to trying to save as many people as she can. It's not successful, but
and she's rewarded with a path of escape. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And, so the opposites. And I thought it was edited well together.
It was
actually cool. And that's the thing. There are some glimmers of light throughout this episode.
Technical aspects.
The
sound design, the visuals, the editing, the music, it's again exceptionally well made. It is exceptionally poorly written, you know, like it's and when it comes to television, again, I reiterate this as medium, writing is much more important to it than it is movies. I think, you know, movies need good writing. It's to be sure, but it doesn't depend on the story. I watched Love Lies Bleeding last night in theaters. There's a story beat at the end that's like, what the fuck? Okay. You know, but that's cool because it looks dope. It looks awesome. The sound is cool. It's edit, like it's awesome. It makes the ending of the movie fucking great. So it's like, it's one of those things where medium to medium, these things don't translate, you know, things need in TV, things need to make sense. There was something Denis Villeneuve was talking about in relation to Dune 2, a few weeks back when he was on his, like, I don't like dialogue thing. You know, do you remember that discourse?
Yeah.
He claims, and he said, dialogue is for TV and theater. Like that is what it is for. Like that is like movies are a visual and audio medium, but TV, it's dependent on interactions. It is dependent on the people and stories that the story is telling, and specifically through the writing. And obviously Game of Thrones is cinematic on a different level, so it does get a lot of opportunity to do visual storytelling like it takes advantage of with the white horse at the end, and the editing between the Hound and Arya and stuff. Like, even my favorite scene, the last interaction between Jaime and Tyrion, is my favorite scene because of Tyrion's performance.
Yeah.
It's not because of the way it's written. It's because Tyrion is making me feel what I need to feel in relation to their previous conversations, not because of this conversation itself.
I see. You know? Yeah. In the 2 hours that you watch a movie, you got to get everything you got to get right there. But for TV, it is built on like a lot of the previous stuff. You know, the first episode's not because you got to get there, but like eventually that's what it is. It's like
we are eight seasons deep. We're over what? Over 70 hours into storytelling at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got history. And all history is people, important people in important rooms or whatever. The quote is
talking about important things. Yeah, no.
But man.
So again, I want to reiterate, and we talked about this a little last week, when it comes to TV, this is where the rating of TV and movies differs. The critical rating of movies can go up a lot more if it is well, if the technical aspects are that strong. When it comes to a television show with 70 hours of history, the writing is every bit as important, if not even more important than any of those technical aspects. At least that's how I perceive the medium at large, you know, specifically this deep into a show, you know, so it's hard to reconcile. Hard to accept, you know, it took me 5 years in fact, to accept it, you know, like that's what it took me five fucking years to accept it. It's been 5 years since the show ended. Next month, it will have been 5 years since the show ended.
I don't know. It's not going to happen, but like this might be a show that gets the last two seasons or like the last season rewritten. Like eventually, I don't know. Like I could see, like I see like remakes are just happening everywhere. Like we're not really getting any new things. It's always just like adaptations of previously written things or remakes of things. And I feel like we're just going to run out of ideas and we're going to be like, well, let's go back to one of the greatest shows that's ever existed and let's just make it actually end well. But again, there's legal stuff that has to, a lot of crap that has to, it's not going to happen.
No, I don't know. It won't happen. It's the same thing as people thinking they're going to decanonize the sequels. Like they're not going to fucking do that. Sequel trilogy. No. I mean, like they're not going to fucking do that. Like it's just, as much as I would like to see this story, literally the story they told, I'm fine with the story they told. They just told it poorly. Like I want the events to be given the breadth that early seasons are given.
Say they just make some filler episodes to put in between the ones we have. Is that
you got to chop up a few of these episodes into multiple episodes? Like I said, last episode is three episodes shoved into one.
That's true. There's no way you could. Yeah, you got to split that up somehow. Yeah. But
this episode, there is an existence where this episode, let's say for a few specific things, including Jaime and Cersei and like that sort of stuff, like the Daenerys losing it, you change just a few details. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah. I think it's a brilliant, like, again, the Fallen Angel thing makes sense. They just do it in a bad way. Like they don't do it in the proper way. And I don't know what that way is. So maybe I sound like an asshat, but like,
no,
it's just not the right way. I don't know.
Yeah. But, I think if you could come up with a solution for how they could end Game of Thrones like that, it's not that great of a story. Looking at this death section is kind of crazy.
List them off for me. What do we got?
Varys. Top of the episode. Yep. That sucks. Harry Strickland.
He's the leader of the Golden Company.
Leader of the Golden Company. Yep. See you later.
Normal ass. That's top. That's up at the top of the list with like Kevin Lannister.
Yeah. Fuck that
Harry
guy.
Strickland.
But Euron Greyjoy. Next up. Didn't really care for that fight. Whatever. Should have just died whenever Daenerys burned his fleet. Alana is a commoner. Oh, just a commoner from King's Landing. Sorry.
I'm assuming that's one of the people Arya, like, expressly talks to.
Maybe. That's kind of later. They do have those. Nora, I believe, is her. But yeah, Alana, just a commoner, I guess. But let's see. In the midst of the Battle of King's Landing, a panicked man shouts for his wife, Alana, and asks Arya if she has seen her. So that is who Alana is. She died. And then we have Boros Blunt. Boros Blunt? Maybe? B-L-O-U-N-T. Blount.
Yeah, Blunt. Blunt.
In the Queen's Guard. And
that's the one. That's one of the ones Hound dispatches. Then,
yep, they walk down the steps. Yep, yeah. And bye bye, Preston Greenfield. Another
same situation.
Yep. And probably another. Yes, Aris Oakhart. Another one. The Hound dismantled. Oh shit! Four of them actually. Balin Swan. He got four of them. Five of them. Holy fuck! Osmond Kettleblack. That's the final number. He killed five Queensguard, I guess.
God damn.
Really? Okay, I didn't think it was that many, but I guess he kind of did just, they were coming down the stairs. They were just done.
Yeah. Balin Swan sounds really familiar.
Balin Swan, a knight and the member of the Queensguard season two. He recalls that Jaime defeated Sir Balon at a wedding season three. Indicating the death of blah blah blah. No. He escorts King Tommen to the steps to the great Sept of Baelor.
I think I'm remembering season two where Jaime's thinking about how he beat Balin Swan in something.
Okay.
Maybe,
wow.
Maybe it's a book thing I'm remembering too. Yeah. He might be a little bit bigger. Not bigger, but like just at least says something or something. But
I remember everything about that day. Your helmet, your horse, the rake lines along the da da da, where the sun was in the sky when you knocked Balin Swan in the dirt, is Alton Lannister to Jaime. A guy kind of.
Gotcha. That's the one he strangled.
So maybe. Mm-hmm. Yep. In the cell. Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When he's. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of death. A lot of death.
Okay. Qyburn. We went through that one. Sandor and Gregor Clegane. The Clegane Bowl went down. Nora, that was the mom.
Yeah.
The woman that Arya was saving. Jaime and Cersei Lannister. Kaboom. And these kind of two funny ones I didn't think of. Presumed off screen. Ilaria Sand, because she's just been kept prisoner.
Yeah.
And Unella, the Septa Unella, is Septa, yeah, or was it? Yeah. Just both kind of down there that probably, they got, if they're not dead already from whatever the fuck they were being tortured
they are
by,
you know,
they're dead now. And then many Lannister soldiers and many citizens of King's Landing.
All right. Well, yeah. That sounds right. That's a lot of death. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people in this episode.
Yeah.
So. Before we get to the rating section of this episode, I'm going to go ahead and do the plugs. If you would, head to patreon.com/pennybloompod where you find over 50 hours of exclusive content, all sorts of book reviews, comic book reviews, movie reviews, and the like. And for $3 a month, you can support this podcast financially. It's huge because it costs me money and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. Head to Twitter, follow at pennybloompod, follow on Instagram and TikTok while you still can at pennybloompodcast. Go ahead and watch us on YouTube. You would see just how disappointed I am in this episode. I know you'll be able to hear it, but you'd see it too.
It's way more apparent.
Yeah, our essence is completely drained. We are usually invigorated with a bit more passion, It was this one, you can see that on YouTube if you want to see that. Weirdos, why would you want to see that? Damn, you like to see me sad? Fuck you. But not for real. Leave a 5-star rate and review wherever you might be listening and continue to download. If this is like one of your first time joining us on the Winter is Blooming Game of Thrones rewatch, we are much more positive about so much other stuff in this show. Like, go back and watch the show and watch along with us. It's timeless now. Like, you will always have Winter is Blooming as a companion podcast to Game of Thrones. So if you are joining us for the first time, it's well worth your time to go back and check that stuff out. If you're ever interested in rewatching the show in its entirety, we have an episode for every episode. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But with that, let's go ahead and throw a rating at this bad boy. Enjoyment wise, actively don't like it. Made me angry, made me annoyed. Got my blood rate, my blood pressure up. Didn't make me feel good. I was literally like, I texted you last night, like I spent so much of my time texting you absolutely pissed. Emily was laying down in the bed next to me, and like her feet would like her legs would like touch me, and I'd be like, God damn it. You know, like I'm like,
just everything is everything is
overloaded. You know, I'm like, and I looked at the TV and I was like, this is your fucking fault. You know what I'm saying? I was like, you goddamn motherfucker, D&D. I'm a god.
Oh yeah, it's they deserve, I don't know what they deserve, something. I did slot in one final addition, I think. Maybe next episode we'll get something, but I don't think so. For Arya's kill list, and I put revenge. She's learned that it is not worth it. I don't know what the ceiling is for actively I hate and I'm mad and I, so I mean, like, it's definitely below a 5. I know that for sure.
Yes, yes. But I do think there's actively bad. I think there's something to be said for the things we do like about it, you know? I do enjoy the Hound and Arya. I don't think they miss a beat with the Hound and Arya in this episode.
That was good.
And they're two of the most important characters in the show to me personally. So I loved seeing that.
Your scene as well was very, very nice. Tyrion and Jaime send off was very good. Let's see.
Beyond that, I don't know that I like. I mean, I like the technical aspects. Like, the only thing that makes this episode tolerable is that it does look good, is that it does sound good, is that it is edited well. It is performed phenomenally, and I love seeing that stuff. So, I know that that's critical. That's the critical side of the rating. However, that does make the episode more enjoyable, whereas it could have been even less, you know? So I find myself probably at a 4. I think I will go comfortably below a 5, but I won't go to the point where I'm like, there's nothing redeeming about this. You know what I'm saying?
I think I like that. I think, and it's a different project, whatever, but on the comic book movie project, I think we said, like, once you get below a 4, you are entering the territory of, I will never watch this again. Like, there's...
Yes, that's...
Like,
yes,
that's when you start to enter, it's like, it is bad, and I actually don't want to watch it again. And I think, like, it's just on that barrier. It is like, it does have a decision that they make that angers me beyond anything. Like, it throws so much of the show's greatness just kind of, you know, it's just boom, gone in that one instant.
It does, but it's never kept me from revisiting the show, you know? I will likely watch this again, given the rewatch we've done.
Yeah,
it'll be far longer than a year from now that I rewatch Game of Thrones. But I guarantee you, this will not be the last time I watch Game of Thrones. You know,
No, it will not, and I know that for sure as well. I will come back to it because I will see. You know, TikTok might not be a thing in 10 years, but whatever the equivalent form will be, it'll probably be hardwired into our brains. But I'll see a Jon Snow edit, and I'll be like, "Oh, well, I'm watching Game of Thrones again." It's that simple. It'll be one thing to get me back in.
And now, I mean, like the way shit has changed so much for the podcast and for us personally since we started this project is kind of absurd to consider. We started this project while Andor was on TV.
God.
That was what was on that we were covering alongside Game of Thrones. We started this a week after season one of House of the Dragon ended. We've since, we were in the midst of our 52-year journey through film.
Oh my god. Oh Lord. Yeah, that's some changes. It has been some time.
So, beyond the quality of the show itself, I will certainly revisit the show because it will make me nostalgic for this. You know what I'm saying? I've loved doing Winter is Blooming. I've loved doing the Game of Thrones rewatch podcast.
Yeah.
And there's a really good chance that years down the line, I will watch the show and I will and listen to our show about
Fuck. I didn't even realize that I could do this. Yeah. But I can.
One day.
And I'll realize how I felt at that time, and I'll see, do I still feel the same way or not?
Were we idiots? Was I stupid? Yeah. You know, did I know anything about anything? You know, that sort of thing.
Will it be a Star Wars effect of once it's just been out for so long that it's like, you know what, we hate the ending now. We liked it, and then now we're hating it now, but maybe in 10 years we like it again. Who knows? But time will only tell. We have one more episode in a 5x5, and that's it. That is like nuts. That's like, it's like the, I'm in denial. I'm like Cersei, hardcore right now. I'm like,
no,
wow.
I mean, like, that's what's insane, man, is that like, that's what makes me go with the four here. It doesn't keep me from loving the show. You know, it doesn't keep me, it doesn't, I'm of the mind that this doesn't ruin the television show. You know what I'm saying? There are people who think season 8 is bad enough that you should just toss the whole fucking thing altogether. And I think that's stupid as hell. The show has been it was the best show ever for several seasons. And you can't erase that, you know, no matter how much the ending might sting, you know.
I'd say if you are discrediting the entire show for the last couple episodes or season 8 at large, you can say season 8, sure, but I'd say the first 3 are actually kind of good.
I would too.
But if you're discrediting the whole show for that, you're kind of doing what Daenerys is doing. You're not just killing Cersei and just taking what is bad out. You're applying it to the whole part. And so you're kind of becoming the thing you hate that what happened, I guess it's not the decision that she, it's weird. It's a weird bag because it's like, it's not the decisions that are made. It's just how they are. Well, damn,
how they do it, you know, because I mean, like, it's insane to consider what season 1 was like.
That's so long ago. The self-awareness ruined the show. The whenever it got to the point that it got to and they knew that they were the biggest show in the world, it ruined the show. And it never could have been the same after that. Like, they weren't making the show just to adapt the writing. They were trying to build the hype even more. And go into it, and I think that's the downfall that I see, and also no source material.
Yeah, no source material. I mean, like, if George R. R. Martin had done his fucking job, maybe we'd be having a whole different conversation right now.
Maybe that's who we should really be mad at. I guess it shouldn't be
D&D
rushed.
D&D were in over their heads. Like, art, they rushed deadlines. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah. They were just like, well, we have to end it somehow. All these people are working. They don't really want to work on it anymore. That's just.
D.B. Weiss doesn't have another credit. Doesn't have another writing credit. This is all he's ever written. David Benioff, what he wrote before this, like directly before this, was X-Men Origins Wolverine. So, like, they were dependent upon source material, I tell you.
They're giving millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to these people. You've done nothing before. You have no credit. You have no credibility.
They were incredible at adapting the work that existed. Like, they wrote really good TV based off stuff that they could adapt. Like, they were really good.
It's true.
That was, like, there are bad adaptations of stuff, like, of books, of all sorts of stuff. Like,
This is not.
And when the books were being adapted, it was extremely fucking strong. This is just a really good example of what happens when, you know, you get hoisted by your own petard. But let's talk about a critical rating. Do you think it's better than our enjoyment rating?
Yes.
I think so too. I think it's similar to last week. I think it's similar to episode 4 in that everything is good except for the story. Now, the story is worst, but the technical aspects are better. So that ends up, to me, kind of evening it out.
Okay. I was going to say this is just middle of the road. Because
I would agree with 5. I would agree with 5.
5 just flat because of how angry, like, that one decision is big enough to, like, weigh it down.
Yeah.
Like, enough. Like, her not going for the Red Keep first will boggle my mind for the end of time. Like, I don't know. That's kind of the one thing I will never let go of. I've let go of Palpatine returning in Star Wars, in which I thought I would never let go of that. But no, it's whatever. I think I will actually never, like, there's no way I can, like, I could see another path where I'm like, oh yeah, no, this makes sense.
What you had to do. No, it isn't.
So, I think, agree that, like, critically, this episode is made, like, it looks way better.
Brilliant looking episode. Miguel Sapochnik is an incredible director. He had, like, I believe we're rocking with Fabian Wagner again as the cinematographer, and we gave him a bunch of love for The Long Night a couple weeks ago. Let me double check that just in case I'm mistaken, but I believe we came to the conclusion it was the same guy. Yes, Fabian Wagner. He can shoot. Yeah. He can fucking shoot, man. Like, this is a good-looking episode.
That's the tragic part of it for me, is that there are so many talented people on this show for it to end this way. Like, for all of that work, all of this work that they have spent, and, like, all the talent that was poured into it, to, like, have it just be ruined by the writing room, by, like, just some little decisions that... If other people were in power of the writing, it could have gone completely. I don't know. It's crazy that, like, just one little change could have been the difference between, I guess, a lot of factors. It's not this one decision. It's the shortened seasons. It is not letting the episodes breathe. It is not making a whole other season that should have happened. It is a lot of things that are coming into effect. The self-awareness, the writing, the no source material, a lot of things coming on. But at the end of the day, George R. Martin did write that stuff and it was adapted. So, like, the writing, it is possible. Like, you, like, it's not like it's just D&D aren't those guys. They can adapt well. They can't really create.
No, they're not. They're not. Like, and I think that this is what makes it clear. You know, they've got a Netflix show coming out soon that I'm sure will be bad. You know,
it's weird that you would assume that, like, to market a television show, you would want to be able to say from the makers of Game of Thrones, but maybe you don't want to say that.
That's how they were marketing it.
They're saying from the makers.
It's called Three Body Problem. Oh, it actually started. It actually came out already.
According
to the release date of this podcast. March 21st it came out. The Three Body Problem. Sci-fi, epic.
Why? Why on my birthday does D&D have to drop again? Why? Yeah. Why? They know. No.
Aha! It's based on a novel. Let's go, baby. It'll be good.
We've won.
Rocks. Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
at least
based on a novel. They're great at adapting shit. So, you know, like, maybe that show's fucking good. Maybe, I don't know. But, like, there were a lot of people, I remember when that trailer released, that were like, oh, this looks good. And then it said from the creators of Game of Thrones, and they were like, never mind, not gonna fucking touch it.
So sad. That's actually so sad.
It is.
Because if you do that before season 8, it's like, holy shit, this is from the makers of Game of Thrones. You're like, oh, I'm in, like, automatically, no matter what they're making. And then now it's like,
they were signed on to do a Star Wars movie. Season 8 came out. They were no longer signed on to do a Star Wars movie. Oh, we got a little one. You got a little one.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
Are we cool coming to a 5 here?
I believe so, and that is a 4-6-7 on the grand scheme of things.
I'm interested to see if we think the finale's better. I remember some things. I'm not counting on it. I can't imagine I feel much worse, though. So we'll see when we return next week with the finale of Game of Thrones. It won't be the finale of Winter is Blooming, as next week we will do Season 8, Episode 6, the finale of the show, and conclude Winter is Blooming on Wednesday with our Game of Thrones 5x5, where we will be doing five top fives in one episode. That will consist of top five favorite characters, top five favorite performances, top five favorite episodes or events. I can't remember what we ended up settling on, or both. I can't remember. And then top five duos, where we will be pairing off characters and deciding who are our favorite. You know, I got Jon and Tormund on display here. You know, you got Tyrion and Varys. You got Arya and the Hound. You got all sorts of people, all sorts of pairings.
Oh, yeah.
Cersei and Qyburn, Daenerys,
Bronn, Tyrion, Podrick and Brienne.
Yes, exactly. Podrick and Tyrion. All sorts of shit, you know. Jaime and Bronn, you know, like I don't think I'd go with them, but they were a duo at one point. So like these are the kinds of things that we're bringing to the table. You know, we will have a mathematical conclusion to who were statistically our favorite characters and our favorite performances. However, I'll be interested to see if that aligns with what I personally think. Because episodically versus, you know, the entirety of it, you know, who knows? So we got that coming next week. That will be the official conclusion of Winter is Blooming. And we're sticking with the Game of Thrones universe here in a couple months when House of the Dragon comes back. Fire and Blood, Fire and Bloom will be back. And I'm so very excited. Gonna get a rewatch of that in as well. Not gonna do it on the podcast. We're not gonna cover that again. We might do a little preview, like a recap, like, you know,
hey, remember
how are we
that?
Feeling heading into season two? Because I have not watched season one since it was on TV. So, and now that we've revisited Game of Thrones, I'm interested to see how I'm going to feel fresh off of it. Heading straight into season two, so I'm excited for that. Maybe we'll do a little, you know, recap, remembering how do we feel compared to how we felt and so on and so forth. So, but that, even so, wouldn't be until House of the Dragon season two is about to come out, which is at least a month and a half away. We got that to look forward to, and next Friday we continue our Bad Batch. We continue Bad Batch, season 3, episode
12.
Okay. Getting deep. We're almost done. We're only 3 weeks away from finishing that, 1 week away, from finishing, Thrones. So we're coming to the conclusions here, man. Game of Thrones ending, Bad Batch ending. But luckily we got a lot. We got some big plans coming up. We're going to be covering the John Wick franchise in the weeks following. Super excited for that. We got a lot of movies coming up in May. I'm so very excited for that. Back to movie coverage for May. But movies in May. We've been doing a lot of TV with Thrones and Batch. We're going to do movies May, and then June we're back to House of the Dragon and Acolyte. Some more Game of Thrones and Star Wars come June. So I'm very excited for that. But yeah, with that, I was Colton Robertson. I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it is always a pleasure to have you. And remember, peace, love, and bloom. And burn them all.